The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Nashville Breakdown Show. It's been a crazy week, kiddos. So let's get to it, shall we?
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark.
What is up, my fellow degenerates and degenerites, or as I like to say, my friends. This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, and I am your host, Dan Tom, martial arts analyst and writer, and today we are going to break down UFC Nashville. But before we do, just want to get some notes and address why it's late today, the podcast and the breakdown. I'll try to keep this as the UFC Nashville breakdown show, not the UFC Nervous breakdown show, but boy, oh boy, did Dan Tom have a week, ladies and gentlemen. Did Dan Tom have a week? I essentially felt like, the podcast of Deep Pools, if you don't know me already, I essentially felt like Michael Douglas from Falling Down for like a couple days straight. It was just like everything that could possibly happen was happening. Now, if you watched the, video on a recent podcast guest, John Lee, did the How I Watch Fights. He cites about 50 to 60 hours, and I don't think anybody's really questioned that, but some people are like, wow, that's a long time. And even I had to stop and think about it. I remember when I was sharing that with John, I was like, is it that thing where we're always kind of boosting it up? Do I really do that much study? And I looked, and I'm like, that was an understatement. I probably do more, and when you really, break down the card from top to bottom, and yes, there's some fighters you kind of have a certain feel. You don't have to watch their whole, fights and whatnot. But, and you can kind of, pick and choose on what you want to see for a particular matchup coming up. But I do clock that time. And that's not including the code transcription and all that stuff. Because I'm on a one-man show over at MixedMartialAnalyst.com, by the way, where you can find episodes of the Protect Your Neck Podcast. I'm an idiot podcast host, and amongst the many things that I've been putting off, which I'm actually making the time to do, I'm going to make sure I get more of these episodes to you. A lot of y'all would point it out to me that only 10 are available on iTunes, so I'm sure it's something very simple that I'm missing, it's a very click of the button issue, but I'm going to get that fixed. Until then, you can go to MixedMartialAnalyst.com under the podcast section, smartphone-friendly players, dating all the way back to the first episode. Not that many to go back to, but I have been doing the written breakdowns, since summer of 2015, and Dan Tom has not missed one. That's right. It's probably been, by the numbers, the busiest, UFC years, 2015 and 2016, and I haven't missed one since I started doing this, and I think it's catching up. I'm not gonna lie. I want to be impervious. I want to be strong and show no weakness, and all that stuff. But I'm not gonna be fake. I'm gonna cut the shit with you. We're real here. And man, it was a rough week for Dan Tom. Kind of circling it back. Pardon my long-windedness, which is a custom here on the Protect Your Neck podcast. But yeah, it was certainly a long week. Poor Benjamin, as you might have heard him scratching on the last podcast as a precursor, but old Benji boy's been dealing with this for a couple months. The wind's been bad here. You might have heard that MMA Roadshow episode where the power gets turned off because there was just crazy windstorms. That same week, I had a tree blow in front of the gate, trapping all us residents here in the apartment complex temporarily. And the winds have just been crazy, putting pollen in the air. And my poor dog, if y'all have dog or dogs with dog allergies, probably sympathize. Don't worry, I won't turn this into a Protect Your Dog podcast, but his allergies are just killing him to the point where his claws are just, he's like literally scratching himself down to the flesh, so I just haven't been policing him almost 24-7, and kind of tending to him, doing everything in the book. Salmon oils, fish oils, allergy medicines, allergy chews, oatmeal baths, and it's just relentless. It's real bad, so I got him a nice vet appointment on Monday. Going to take him in. Probably have to get some crazy expensive medicine, which is going to suck. But I am a softie, and I treat him like my boy. So just want him to be all right. He's been doing bad. If you saw my tweet earlier, you also see that old Benjamin's been defecating himself too. I woke up this morning to, you know, he's good. He hasn't had an accident, at least in this place, you know, last 6 months. And wake up to him. Just taking a crap in my room. Sorry for the visual and all that. And again, I'm just going to cite this example because this is the week in the nutshell, and we'll move on. We'll get to the good stuff. I'm not going to, believe me, I know I've taken your back here. I've inserted my body triangle and I'm in your ear, but this is the Protect Your Neck podcast, not the Protect Your Ear podcast, so I won't abuse them for much longer. But yeah, I essentially woke up to my dog shitting in my room, and what I woke up to abruptly and earlier than I planned to as well the morning before was an explosion under my sink of cleaning product. Fortunately, that cleaning product was, yes, pet stain remover for things like, you know, poop and pee and stuff on the carpet. So I didn't think it was that big of a deal when it blew up. I'm like, man, my dog hasn't, like, had an accident in, like, the last 6 months to a year. I'll just get it in my next run of the store. And then, boom, my dog's just shitting all over the place. Made a couple rounds. All right, but we are cleaned up, ready to go. And despite my best intentions, yes, we're going to get this podcast out for you. And I guess the reason why I'm apologizing is because if you look at my written breakdown, usually that's out a whole day before the podcast. And I always cover the main cards, depending. Sometimes I do have ones where I just spotlight a couple fights, and that's what I had to do here. In fact, as I'm recording this, I don't even know what I put out. I have the main and co-main taken care of. Those were done earlier in the week. I even have a Dotson versus Wineland done, but just kind of not edited yet. I'm not even sure if I'm going to throw that one on there. I may throw that one and just call it quits, or add on Perry and Ellenberger, because I really wanted to get that one on there. Because that's one of interest. But yeah, it's probably going to be just a 3-4 main card you're seeing on MixedMartialAnalyst.com. So I apologize, but I did attach, as per usual, my picks and plays. And I assure you, despite the crazy, insane week that I kind of just alluded to, and a long-winded allude, if you will, and I'm done with it, don't worry. But, despite that, I did get the homework done. It was sporadic. It was much, much later than I would like. But believe me, I put them hours in, and I have a lot of fun stuff to talk about, because we are going to talk about, from bottom to top, UFC Nashville, the techniques and the betting. I got my notes in front of me. I'm ready to go. I feel confident in my plays. Conservative, the way the numbers add up, everything. I actually feel really good. Like, it came together last minute, but very well. So please don't let the subpar, admittedly subpar, breakdown dissuade you. We're going to get into it here. And again, I'm not trying to abuse my microphone privileges and the fact that you're here to vent, but more as an explanation out of respect for you giving me your time. That's right. You're not giving me your money. I'm not asking for it, nor will I. All this is free. So in that sense, you know, maybe, Dan, you're being a bit hard on yourself. You do a good job. We appreciate what you give you. And I've heard the shout-outs this week. I appreciate it. But it's because of those shout-outs. It's because of your kind words, your kind reviews on iTunes, which, thank you. That really does help the Protect Your Neck podcast. And more just the kind gestures just go a long way with me. Money pollutes friendships and sometimes good intentions. And although I appreciate, you know, money as much as the next guy, really, the kind words mean a lot, which is why I wanted to at least give you the explanation to let you know that, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, which, by the way, a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, the other stuff, the good stuff, there's a lot of good stuff going on too, by the way, that I haven't been able to tell you yet. Plan A of that I'll be announcing on Monday, for whatever that's worth. But I can't release the plan B of it, yet, but, good things, very good things. Just Dan Thomas is not good with the stress, man. Whether it's, you know, like stress of, you know, stuff, life beyond your control, like dogs or everyday stuff that y'all are dealing with, I'm sure, as you're listening to my voice, to even the good stress, like good problems to have and stuff like that. Like, I'm bad at sitting on things, and, you know, when it comes to any type of auditions or interviews or anything like that, I just get really weird. I may have said too much. I'm just going to shut up, but trust me, it's all good things, all in the positive. And I will still be, still be bringing to you the stuff you like. So don't worry. It has nothing to do with any of that content so much. Anyways, we're gonna move forward. Sorry about the long-winded explanation. It's late, as you can tell, and just wanted to make sure I'm getting this to you, at least the East Coasters, by the crack of the morning. Hopefully it'll be out by you by like 2 or 3 a.m. It's approaching midnight here in Las Vegas. So Nashville, though, is where the fights are, and I haven't been to Nashville in over a decade. I went to Bonnaroo. If y'all know your music festivals, Bonnaroo is an underrated one. I know Coachella is the one where like the girls just go to do the Instagram selfies, and I think bands play there too. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just hating on all the Instagram love Coachella gets. But Bonnaroo is actually one of the biggest American music festivals, at least at that time in 2006, up until Woodstock. And that was a particularly big one. Real awesome. Got to drive around, drove to Memphis, got some barbecue, to the Gibson Guitar Factory and nerded out. Nashville countryside, Sun Studio, stopping everywhere between Lynchburg, Tennessee, to some Jack Daniels at their distillery. Drove through the home of the Ku Klux Klan, which was awkward because I was brown and it was late and I was scared. But Nashville was awesome. So Tennessee was awesome, I should say. So no, you get love from this minority. I felt the love despite not being the right of colors in some places, or so it felt. I know, I'm just judging. Sure, there was a bunch of Confederate flags on the porches and cops giving me weird looks, but hey, I forgive culture, good food, and music, and that the South does have. So I got love for Tennessee, hope to go back. Could not make it down for this one, but we will jump into the card from the very bottom. Hector Sandoval versus Matt Schnell. This fight wasn't on the fights to avoid, but it kind of fits the Devin Clark, Jake Collier matchup of last card, where you essentially have two guys with skewed sample sizes, but where they're at in their career, they're very much in the developing stages. Matt Schnell, I think, I'm picking Sandoval, who is the slight favorite here, and I think the line is right, having him the slight favorite. Whereas Matt Schnell's line looks to be creeping up to even in some houses, depending where you're looking. Of course, using Five Dimes here, I'll be quoting you, but I go back and forth between Five Dimes and Bovada. And hitting my withdrawal, not limits, but where I like to withdraw from, and maybe going to look into some BetDSI. If you have any recommendations on other houses that have easy withdrawals, easy betting, let me know. I'm not sponsored, so don't mind openly shopping on the podcast. In fact, we don't have sponsors here on the Protect Your Neck podcast. But, you know, if anyone's interested, hit me up for mixedmartialanalyst.com. But, yeah, on the real, though, all you degenerates out there, some of you have reached out because I think I've asked this on Twitter before. But, yeah, Five Dimes is where I'm going to pull from. Back to Matt Schnell. I think he has a higher ceiling than Hector Sandoval, but I think at this time in their career, I like Sandoval to take this. Yeah, as far as the grooming process, even though I don't, you know, he might not look as flashy, he does a lot of the things well that I think is going to trouble Matt Schnell, you know, whether it's from the hooks, aggression, the durability, and the movement you get, you know, you're seeing much more improvement from the Team Alpha Male guys. And as well, we've seen, you know, Schnell have his, you know, kicks caught and countered many times. And Sandoval can do that. He's done it in his past fights. And more importantly, that looks like, you know, catching kicks and just capitalizing on those little scrambles seems to be a real, you know, emphasis point for Team Alpha Male fighters in general. So I expect Sandoval to try to take advantage of those. And again, Schnell's competent off his back. Most of his, you know, he's real active there. Most of his submissions look to come from there. And, but again, the looks that Sandoval's getting in the room, you know, I like his chances there. He's a stronger guy on top. Again, I'm high on Wilson Hayes. That fight was short notice, you know, across the country as well. But again, short notice. More importantly, a debut. You know, looked much better against Freddie Serrano last December. Hector Sandoval did. So I'm going with Hector Sandoval here. I didn't place any on either guy. It's just not enough to like, not enough to lean on for value or techniques there. We're going to go to the next one, which there will be some leaning on it. My favorite underdog of 2016, even though he lost at the end there, and I didn't pick him against Colby Covington, but that's right. Brian Barberina versus Joe Proctor. Sorry, I got really loud on the mic there. Probably popped it, but just Joe Proctor. He is from Boston. But even if he wasn't, he has that name where I just want to, I just can't go not go into my Bill Burr voice without, you know, talking about Joe Proctor. I think he played, did Proctor play the college hockey like Holtzman? We'll get to Holtzman later, but I think Proctor played the college hockey. But yeah, I like Barbarina here. He's the first recommended piece of the parlay. You know, he doesn't have the, his wrestling's not bad, but he's not a wrestler per se, nor has the wrestling chops, but he does have the durable southpaw, which, you know, is, you know me, one of my favorite tropes, you know, as far as underdogs. We have the durable southpaw who can wrestle, though, which we have one of those later in the card. You know, you can get some surprising results. But I think this is Barbarina's fight to win. Proctor's tough, and he, you know, he's a dog to the end. You know, if you all remember that impressive guillotine choke he got on mini Randy Couture, Justin Edwards, and you know, he had to battle through, you know, hematoma, and you know, yeah, Proctor is definitely a dog, but the problem is he's an opportunistic dog, and he's a little too opportunistic. You know, he throws his kicks and he's improved them, but he throws them in singles, and even though he's better at putting his punches together in combination, he usually really doesn't do it unless he's really kind of getting off, because he's got, or, you know, hurts the guy, because Proctor's got really good killer instinct. But the problem is, it's just, he's very opportunistic, and if those opportunities don't come, we see him lose rounds, and Barbarina only gets stronger as the fight goes on. And not only, you know, is Proctor opportunistic and could, you know, find himself behind on scorecards if he doesn't find success early, even if he finds success early with those, you know, those opportunities, because Barbarina is very hittable. I mean, he does traditionally take damage. Even though I champion Barbarina, that's something I've always noted in the breakdowns. You know, his head's very upright. But Barbarina's got better at pulling and returning, and even when he does get hit, he's so damn durable. And what does that do even to a guy like Proctor's confidence? You know, when you hit someone with your best shots, you intercept them with that left hook that Proctor has kind of developed, and I expect he'll go to with a southpaw, because Proctor doesn't get too many southpaw looks in the gym. And, you know, he's got Lozon with his camp, but Lozon's not a southpaw, obviously. So most of his rounds are with a guy that's not a southpaw, nor can he afford to go southpaw, because Lozon has to focus on his own southpaw. That being said, I'm sure they brought southpaws in, since, you know, they're both facing southpaws. You have to imagine there's work there. Even though Proctor was, you know, leaned on his right hand early, I think his, you know, his left hook still has play here, especially if thrown as a check. But man, the check hook of Barbarina is his money punch. And usually, just like a submission, if you have a good armbar, chances are you have a good armbar defense. So I see that here with Barbarina. I don't feel too comfortable with a third round play like I did with him against Worley, even though that didn't come to fruition. I've talked about those third round looks there. Although he could get a late stoppage, he could also get a decision. So I honestly left that the hell alone. Just played Barbarina heavy in my parlay pieces. I just think Proctor, just too inactive, too inconsistent. And again, this is Barbarina coming down to 155, and he was strong, and I was picking him against guys at 170. And I think he's just too durable here. I really like his clinch game. I think Proctor goes to the clinch when he's fighting smarter. He'll do that, or when he's looking for a safety position. But he's not going to have that here. Even when Barbarina's back's to the fence, we see him just be mean with those elbows, and his pull, like I said earlier, his pull and returns and his footwork is just becoming much, much better. And his ground game is underrated and serviceable enough to survive the storms of what Proctor can offer. So, the pick is Barbarina, and I don't like seeing him as a favorite. I don't like seeing him as a 3-1 favorite. I understand why people would be against that, but as one of the few people to officially pick him against Sage and Worley Alves, I like Brian Barbarina against Joe Proctor. The next fight, headline of the fight pass prelims, is Alexis Davis versus Cindy Dandois. This one, I thought the line was a bit inflated, but then, you know, kind of looking at it, you know, I agree. I think it's right as far as Alexis Davis being, you know, your near 3-1 favorite. Boy, Dan, if you pull up, stop being lazy and pull it up on Dimes. All right, Joe Proctor's name's going to fuck me up. All right. And, by the way, speaking of things getting in your head, that if you're watching any Cindy Dandois tape, there's a lot of let it go stuff. from her Invicta fights, because she would dress up as these, you know, Disney characters or whatever. And I got a good laugh over the there's a certain point where Dan was on top and someone from the crowd goes, "Let it go! Let it go!" It was a very poor joke, but when you were stuck in your room for, again, 50 to 60 hours on end watching fight footage, even very inappropriate stuff can be the highlight of your day and make you laugh. Not the highlight of my day, that's a little bit far, but make me laugh when it would make me laugh. That's fair to say. All right, so I have the lines up in front of me. And yeah, Dan Dewall plus 250, Alexis Davis minus 300. I like Dan Dewall's jiu-jitsu, and I feel it's live enough here to catch Alexis Davis. And I know Sarek McMahon's a beast, and McMahon was in desperation mode, and Davis, you know, took some shots, we don't know if she was even at 100% by the time the submission was in. She tried to do some right steps, but just let McMahon get too comfortable too early. The thing is, Dan Dewall is just more opportunistic, because even though she's only a purple belt in jiu-jitsu, she comes from a judo base that she's been doing since she was a little girl. And in judo, you're really quick on the transition. So a lot of times you're going for stuff, you know, very fast in transit. And it makes her very dangerous, but it also makes her lose position a lot. I mean, this is kind of why Miesha Tate originally brought her in to Extreme Couture, where I've seen her work a lot on the mat. I never got to work with her or anything. Dan Dewall, that is. Tate, I actually got to roll with a couple times and is good. Really good. I imagine those skills are rubbed off, because when you look at those inconsistencies of fights, you know, granted, Dan Dewall is still managing and juggling, doing the juggling act, but it seems like she's doing it much better, has had her weight down and in her recent fights, and just looked in better shape and better performance. But her grappling's really gotten better, and it's really crafty, and the problem is it's so hard because it can cost her positions. But, you know, she's so strong coming from 145, has submitted some legit girls, you know, Megan Anderson, Jasmine Duke not so much, but Ibragimova, who, you know, granted she got iced by Cyborg, but, you know, this is a decent female name amongst the European scene, and Marlos Kunin, who, you know, my favorite female fighter. Just because I'm weird like that, and really, and just always have a soft spot, love me some Marlus. I mean, a lot of things to like, but unfortunately, the big factor is she just looks like a deer in headlights. With all due respect, Dan Dewall does on the feet, and does not look to have much enthusiasm about fixing it. In fact, it seemed like, you know, her enthusiasm seemed kind of questionable about her career at a certain point. And it looks like, you know, she's put together 3 wins since then. So I don't want to assume too much about her mental state or where it's at. But it's hard. It's hard to bank, you know, when you got a kid, got a good job. I don't want to comment on a female's age to be rude and even add to the assumptuous nature of what I'm already doing here, but, you know, she's not young, it's hard where that motivation is. And, you know, you can say the same thing to Alexis Davis. She's been around, just had a kid, came back, came through a tough loss, but she looked in great shape coming back in. She looked prepared, said she was diligent about working out during the pregnancy. I just think she ran into a tough Sarah McMahon, who's really, you know, got past a plateau from what it's looking like in recent fights. So the line is justified to have her as a 3-1. But the play I like here is the under, because and I don't like much over and under, especially recently. And even on this card, there's one over that I was looking at and just decided to stay away, and I'll elaborate that and others. But this one you're getting plus money, plus 105 at under 2.5. And I just think, you know, with the way these girls are, and even though I'll be rooting for Dan Dewall here, there's very much that killer be kill feel with her alone, and sometimes with just having one fighter with that killer be kill factor, which we'll be having in a late heavyweight fight later on in the card. That's enough to even play the under, and, you know, 2.5 rounds, a debut. Alexis Davis is going to be want to be making a point. She's made some underrated improvements and looked like she was turning a corner post her Rousey loss before the McMahon loss. So there's going to be a lot to shake out and to answer here. I may have played Davis Small at the plus 300 as an adding her, maybe a one of my fun, five teamers. But yeah, I think I largely stayed away and just put a fun little flyer on the under. I'm just going to see what happens. Maybe play Dandois, but yeah, I'm pretty sure I stayed away from Davis in this fight for the most part. Just a couple fun flyers on the plus money for the dredged value word. All right, next fight. Is it the other a female fight? Yes, that is. Jessica Penny versus Danielle Taylor. Okay, Danielle Taylor, really short and, you know, didn't have the best sample size to draw from. But I exercised caution when breaking down her debut fight. Even though I was big on Moroz and picked Moroz, I said Taylor was going to be live. She seems to have this freakish power and at that point where she should be turning corners or not. But for the most part, you know, athletic, serious, within age, within rhythm, yeah, you know, there is some fight-to-fight intangibles. Whereas Penne, you know, again, young, looking great, looking well-prepared, looking Penne looking real good coming into this thing, honestly. It's tough to say, though. You know, I was real high on her before, and in hindsight, it's crazy to be high on her against Andrade, who, you know, I'm all about Andrade. But just the game's not translating, and the commitment to strikes is just not there. And then you factor in something that I kind of watch factor is people coming back from nose surgeries or any kind of orbital breaks, you know, Josh Koscheck or things like that. You see, there's a real psychological factor, and you know, things I want to look at when a fighter comes back from those things is that fight after when they take a hit, what do they do? And I don't want to be more sumptuous than, again, I already am on this thing, but I don't like what I saw when Penne got hit by Andrade. I don't like it. If the beating she took from Jan Jacek wasn't enough to worry for her future, the reactions, and not just the loss itself, but the reactions from the strikes from Andrade was enough telling. So I don't think that's going to be this here. Taylor's more of a counter striker. So the problem is I think either Taylor can upset your favorite here, which makes it dangerous because she is live. But with Taylor showing that, you know, she's willing to kind of have lulls in activity and Penny showing that she could be fighting from range, we could have a kind of Marion Renault, Holly Holm, each girl beating up the air in front of them kind of fight. You know, I could see Penne looking to show her improvements early and kind of showing them through movement. But as soon as she starts, you know, maybe getting a little too liberal with the showing striking improvements, she takes one counter shot. And then we just see both girls get tentative and just kind of air punch and not really get to the ground where Penne has the advantage. So stay away from this one like hot fire. This is I don't know if this is on my avoid list officially, but if it's not, it's only because y'all should know to avoid this one. Next one not to avoid, though, well, maybe, you know, do what the hell you want. You know me, I'm not telling you where to put your money. That's the thing about offering free content, but putting your heart and soul into it is you get to do things like hide behind the words recommended as I do. But no, I y'all know I put my money where my mouth is and put my work into these picks. But yeah, at the same time, I'm not going to tell you where to put your money. That said, recommended piece for the parlay number two, Scott Holtzman. He's burned me before, gosh darn it. And I agree if you know, you're not as impressed because there was a little bit of hype on him coming in. But, you know, it's hard with those regional records to see how guys are going to translate. And, you know, I want to say he was just an athletic hockey guy. He translated it well into fighting. But it's more than that. You know, there's a lot to like about Holtzman. You know, not only on the feet, even though he was trying to do his Mike Tyson impersonation a little too much against Josh Emmett. It got him caught with some knees and some other things. Just the fact that he's kind of showing these awareness and his head's in the right place. I mean, it was in the wrong place in a literal sense because he was dipping a little too low for my liking. Hopefully he fixes that. But in the right sense that he's trying to get creative, he's putting movement. He understands that economy of movement of, you know, slipping and rolling under, you know, under your left, which, you know, gets under the right hand and allows you to come over the top and get that angle to throw your own right hand and all these different things and just really showing where his head's at. I think it's going to serve him well standing against McBride. Not a lot of footage. It feels like even less footage than McBride. I don't know if he's one of those dudes who kind of just took what footage that was out there off. Not that there was much to begin with, but essentially, I don't like the low hand standing that he showed against Lentz. I don't think it was just for Lentz, because McBride is a guy who makes his money on the ground. He's a submission specialist, and he's an awkward grappler. He does a lot of things really well. And you heard Lentz lend credit to that. So I don't think he was trying to avoid the ground with Lentz. And he, you know, sure as shit didn't look like he was defending takedowns. So in other words, I don't think McBride's low hands was that, you know, Robert Whittaker early in his career low hands, where I'm using it till I can get a beat on the underhook. Like, I don't think that's why he's doing it. I think he's just awkward as shit on the feet because he looks awkward as shit. And I see Holtzman's right hand cleaning his clock. I wanted to play inside the distance, but McBride could be tougher than his record suggests. Although his record, if you, the way you look at it, you know, McBride could have a little bit of do or die in him. There's not a lot of action past the second round when you look at his record. Most of his victories and most of his action happens in the first. So I like that for Holtzman there. I think Holtzman can decide where this fight goes and not engage him on the ground. And if he does, there's a lot to like. Again, he's not just you know, some muscle-headed dude. He does one of the things that I always harp on, wrist control. You know, when he does get taken down, he uses the fence beautifully. You know, gets his back, puts his back to the cage like a cheese grater, like you should, and gets 2-on-1, fights the wrist, stands, you know, gets his head up, and gets his hips in the proper position. I love it. I love seeing that. You know, good shoulder pressure on the ground. These little things like that are huge when it comes to an awkward guy like McBride. And who, even though McBride, you know, has a wrestling base, I don't know if it was collegiate or not. It's really vague on his background. But when you look at the little footage that's out there on him, it doesn't look like he's got, you know, the greatest shot. He's not the most, like, athletic and explosive dude. If I were to guess, I tried to find some wrestling footage, I couldn't. I would guess that he's a leg rider. I hate the word dick rider, because now every time I want to use the word leg rider as a wrestling term, I just hear dick rider in my head. Anyways, but, you know, he's a leg rider. You know, he seemed like, you know, one of those real lanky guys that just give guys a real hard time in the wrestling circuits, you know, those guys who kind of have a poor record, but they show up on NCAA tournament day and wreak havoc. You know, all of the names escaping me, guy who beat Chad Mendez. But yeah, that's the kind of wrestler that, like, McBride looks like to me. And he parlays that into a grappling style. Again, you know, going to turtles, not afraid to roll knee bars and this and that. But the problem with that is you can get a little hooked on doing that, especially when it works in the gym and when it works in your fights. And when your fights are against not the best of competition, as McBride's was before the UFC, then, you know, habits could be instilled there. You know, I expect him to be better. I hate to sound like a broken record. You know, we all repeat the fact, but it's true. You hear the commentators say it all the time. Sophomore performance is often better. So that's what kind of wearies me from playing any specific Holtzman inside the distance, even though I'm not going to lie if I do end up sprinkling a bit on that. But no, I mainly played Holtzman just a part of my parlays as a core piece. Next fight, Ortiz versus Moreno. This one is on my fights to avoid because I agree with Ortiz being the favorite. But man, it's so frustrating, man. I don't want to come off like I'm hating on Ortiz. Maybe part of me holds a grudge on Ortiz, you know, for not backing up Willow with Mad Mardigan at the Crow's Nest, you know, for siding with Burble Cut and heading back to the their version of the Shire. Wow, Dan, Ron Howard movie from the 80s. I'm sure everybody gets that. By the way, hopefully y'all caught the tweet, random shout out to Joe Silva, where I used Mad Mardigan picking up the midget, showing how I miss just guys picking up Joe Silva post-fight. God, I miss that. Anyways, bad midget jokes to Ortiz aside, I think he's the favorite here. He's the pick. He's really good. He really surprised me. I was real high on Zach McCoskey, man. Real high on Zach McCoskey. Southpaw can wrestle. He has those jab cross continuums like a Nate Diaz, the 1-2 like a cobra, just firing it right behind the other, disguising the cross, following it right behind the jab at that awkward timing. And I just thought he's great in the scramble. I thought he was going to be able to shut down Ortiz, but not only did Ortiz bring the consistent grind, which you have to respect, you know, especially when you're looking at gamble, especially when you're looking at how fights are won, especially when you're looking at how fights play out and are won in the 125-pound division. It almost makes you kick myself in the butt for not playing Ortiz more, because I always seem to be on the wrong side of the guy. Maybe that's why it's on the avoid list. But it's on the avoid list because Moreno is one of those crazy cats who has this just unpredictable fight-to-fight improvement. He's always looking better, and his wrestling was really surprising me. And you need to be good everywhere, and you have to be good particularly in the wrestling phases of grappling if you want to beat a guy like Ortiz. And if you look at the guys who beat Ortiz and who Ortiz beats, that seems to be a separating factor and common thread. So the grappling of Moreno is going to be tested. We all know his jiu-jitsu is surprisingly better, as it's had, you know, success on guys like Smolka. It's garnered praise from, you know, guys like Elliot Marshall, Joseph Benavidez, and all the guys down there in Denver, Colorado, where he splits his camp between there and Tijuana. So I'll be rooting for Moreno here, man. I really like this kid. I really do. But I think, you know, Ortiz is the kind of guy to teach Moreno a lesson, give him that hard 3-round fight, and probably come away with a decision in his hometown here. And as he says, keep on chopping, or whatever he does. But yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things. So I'd stay away. All right. Before we go to break, we're going to go and nail the headliner. My man, Sam Alvey versus Talis Latest. It's to the point where I almost got to put that little asterisk of bias for Sam Alvey. Yeah, y'all know I got love for Smile and Sam and the Pound for Pound podcast because one of my main man, one of my favorite people, and good friends, whether it be through the internet or not, Jordan Killian, host the Pound for Pound podcast. Go listen to them over at MMA Latest News, MMALatestNews.com. Shout out to those guys. But yeah, Sam Alvey, I like him here. I like him here. I was a big fan of Latest with his resurgence, but I think that resurgence may be over. That resurgence was surprising as it was, and I'm a fan of Latest. I'm not going to make any accusations, but when you look at the timing, you know, there's some questions there. And when you look at just the timing of his age overall, there's some scientific facts that would tell you trend is going a certain way. That being said, Latest knows how to win rounds even when he can't get the takedown, or if he gets the takedown and can't get the submission or can't hold the guy down, which, you know, has become more. I mean, he's a world champion, but most of his work was early on in the gi, and obviously he's improved his MMA wrestling and top game immensely, of course, but nonetheless, it's still really dependent, and we've seen him not have as much success unless we're talking about Chris Camozzi, who we're all rooting gets his third shot at Jacare. But no, all jokes aside, you know, he's got a good left hook, right hand, but it just gets really predictable with it. And you know, the thing with Alvey, it's tough because yes, it's always, is he gonna, you know, just, it's gonna be a staring contest, is he not gonna throw, and you're gonna be pulling your hair out as you bet for him, because we've all been there, you know, right, betting for him, even betting against him. But, you know, you watch Alvey's fights back in, you know, MFC, you'll get, you know, a win in the fifth round, the last 12 seconds to go. He's just that guy. And I'm counting on him to do it inside the distance, because Latest, when the strikes fail, he's going to look to close the distance because he likes to get his takedowns against the cage. He doesn't do it in the open. And that's a problem, because Alvey will put himself against the cage because he's so damn good there. That's the one thing I will say. Everyone's like, oh, he's a knockout artist. And whether you're for him or against him, I just have to tell you, there's so much more to his game than that. He's really a deceptively effective clinch fighter and clinch stifler at the very least. As far as stifling takedowns, getting back up, using those scrambles to pop his hips back over, to keeping his hips above his opponent, like he did against Dylan Andrews. And that knockout power translates to a deceptively heavy top game. I mean, Sam Alvey's a really smart guy. You listen to him, you know, deceptively smart, I should say, because, you know, he plays his character for sure. And he's definitely a funny dude, and you gotta appreciate him. But, you know, you listen to him in the corner, Sean Strickland and other, you know, other guys, he actually has some sound advice, you know, and it's just kind of taking his own advice, so to speak, or his corner's advice. He works with a good team and is a good corner. You know, that's the thing. But I really like how Alvey will kind of stay to his corner. You know, you'll see him do it. He'll kind of hang out in his corner because he can hear his corner, and it takes his opponent away. So it's kind of interesting. Like, that's why Alvey will look funny and looks like he's avoiding a fight. But what he's doing is he's trying to find his corner. So he's using his ears while keeping his eyes on the opponent, and then he'll skirt the fence and kind of corral his opponent and draw them in to his kill zone and his corner to kind of hedge his bets for direction and taking away the vocal direction of his opponent. So if Leydez can't get Alvi down and or keep him down, which is even harder, in my opinion, looking footage at Alvi to keep him down than it is to take him down, I think, you know, he's going to have to submit him. Now, I think that being said, Leydez is still the more efficient round winner on the feet, on the ground, and all around. So my pick here is Alvi, and Alvi inside the distance. I put a little bit of Alvi straight up, but this is one of those ones where, you know, the angle's pretty clear. I don't blame you for not being on Alvi, but even if you're not, I'm sure you can agree with me that if Sam Alvi wins, it's going to be inside the distance by KO. I'll be looking for that KO prop when it drops. It hasn't dropped yet. So far, I just played inside the distance, which is plus 320. I put half a unit on that. And I put, by the way, I put a quarter unit flyer on that Dandois Davis under. I put half a unit on that for what that's worth. Cool whip. All right. Yeah, it's late. Can you tell? Yeah, Dan's talking to himself. All right. Well, on the note of talking to myself, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to knock out the main card for UFC Nashville right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast.
Cucarachas enojadas.
Right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast for the UFC Nashville main card breakdown. We are going to take to the front of that card. It kicks off in the welterweight division with Jake Ellenberger versus Mike Platinum Perry. This one was a tough one. I'm a homer for Ellenberger, so I hope for him to do well. But I like Perry in this spot here. You know, you point to the obvious things, Ellenberger's trends, wins, losses, and all that stuff. I do like the camp he's working with, Rafael Cordero. Much respect to them at Kings MMA. But I think this is a bad matchup. You know, and again, everybody speaks to the KO power of Mike Perry. But, you know, I think his wrestling and counter-wrestling is super, super underrated. So if Jake Ellenberger looks to mix his game up here with the wrestling or perceived wrestling advantages, I don't think they're going to be there. Even if you look in Mike Perry's early career, he's really good at knowing when to kind of bail out of a situation in a scramble, whether it looks like he's getting, you know, the advantage in the position or he's not, and it's kind of wild to scramble. And for a guy with his type of risk management, that's really impressive, you know. Unfortunately, he kind of got taken to task, and when he's forced to really fight on the feet, you know, he failed to do so against Alan Joban. But as far as the anti-grappling portion and any theories there that I was kind of looking at when I was looking at a possible underdog play, that got shut down real fast. I think it's going to be bad news, and I think it's going to be bad for Jake's confidence if he gets shut down and takes some shots in transit, because Perry's really good at making guys pay, particularly with knees. I think knees are going to be the thing. I mean, you look at punches, and the problem is Jake likes hooks and overhands, and Mike Perry defends those pretty well, even though he keeps low hands. And even though he keeps low hands, he defends well to the body. So if you see, you know, Jake try to, you know, switch to southpaw and use that liver shot, which I think would be his best chance, I don't know if it's going to accumulate here because, again, Mike Perry's deceptively well at blocking to the body. Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts did some crafty variations and setups to his left kick where he varied to the body and head. And Perry did a pretty good job at blocking it. And when he doesn't, he eats stuff with ease. So not good to lean on your chin, but his growing body and age and upswing, this is the part of the stage of the career where he is lesser likely to pay for it. Not that he won't. Jake Ellenberger certainly put the lights out on him. Not that he won't, but the chances are much more in the favor that that durable chin that seems to be certainly real will hold up for Mike Perry. And just the problem is, you know, mostly straight punches seem to work well for Mike Perry. That's what kind of worked well for Joe Bann and Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts. But we don't really see those straight punches from either side on Ellenberger, either stance on either side of his arsenal. So that's going to be a problem to me. And whether he goes for the takedowns or is just in the clinch and off the breaks, I just think he's going to be susceptible to knees. You know, Ellenberger can be, you know, he's so aggressive and puts so much into his punches. And then with, you know, the parlay of shot opportunities, he can kind of be heavy on the front foot and kind of low on his level. And if you go back and look at Mike Perry's wins, a lot of them are initiated by knees, even the ones that aren't credited as so on Sherdog. You look at the one against Preston Parsons was particularly impressive, because Preston Parsons is a guy on the regional Florida circuit that's a real, real tough kid. Ran into some tough matchups, hit some bumps, but I hope he's still on the upswing. I got to see him train. He came down to Alliance to do some special work with my former coach Neil Melanson down there. And I got to watch Preston spar with Jeremy Stevens. And not just spar with Jeremy Stevens. I got to see him spar with Jeremy Stevens and the Jeremy Stevens Welcome to Alliance Jeremy Stevens round, where it looked like he was welcoming Preston Parsons to Alliance. And it looked like a real fight. I mean, they were freaking swinging. I thought someone was going to get knocked out. And Preston's chin was so impressive. I saw Jeremy Stevens. I mean, granted, they had full pads on, but they were going, guys. And put it this way, it was the Welcome to Alliance motherfucker from Jeremy Stevens. And at the end, Jeremy Stevens had all respect for this kid because he just ate his shots. And, you know, with no problem. And Stevens looked bigger than Parsons, who, you know, Stevens fights at 145 and Parsons at 155, who fought Perry at 155, who, you know, Perry is a big 155 when he was fighting there earlier in his career in the regional scene. But, yeah, Preston is a hard kid, a talented kid, hard kid to hurt. And that just really jumped off the page when I saw that fight with Perry. That's how I kind of knew Perry was the real deal coming in as far as that goes, as far as being real dangerous. So I'm going to be looking for that. I don't have anything listed because there's no KO prop listed in the Inside the Distance. I believe it's in juice territory. Not worth it. Might as well just play Perry at that point. So I'm going to wait and try to get early on that KO prop line and maybe have Perry in a parlay here or there, a fun five man, but he won't be a part of any of my core bets. All right. But the next man is a part of some core bets, and that is Stevie Ray, as he is -200 favorite over Joe Lozon, who's coming back. What is Lozon coming back at? Sorry, I'll get it here in a second. But yeah, I am a huge Joe Lozon homer, so even though I've got a decent part of my wallet with Ray, my heart's with Lozon. I wouldn't say decent part, but I played Barbs and Holtzman a bit higher because I played them. Those were my early kind of safety hedgers there. Not hedgers, but just safety bets. The way I break it down in my head. Lozon comeback is +170. There wasn't much I like. I mean, Lozon, first of all, 4-6 against Southpaws, UFC Southpaws. Doesn't traditionally do well. Now, although Ray doesn't have the up elbows and traditional Southpaw arsenal that trouble, like Jim Miller does, which is the arsenal that troubles Joe Lozon, because Joe Lozon's a huge fan of the shell defense. So unless you have those kind of up elbows like Jim Miller, or those up jabs like Evan Dunham, you better have a nice inside angle and straight cross, which Stevie Ray does have a good cross, although he doesn't, you know, abuse the inside angle a la Conor McGregor. He gets a little brawly with it, as his Scottish nature tends to allow him to do. I do feel his left hand will serve him well. I'm not sure how much about his right hook, because I believe the checks and the hooks in general are going to belong to Lozon. Stevie Ray sometimes will keep that lead hand low and just being aggressive. Left hook's been something for him. I thought Ross Pearson, who, you know, it was a close decision. I picked Pearson by decision, but was not upset by the least. I was not super confident in that pick because I knew it was going to be a tight fight. I did think Pearson will have a little more success with the left hook in their fight, but he didn't. Ray's movement looked better despite taking that fight on short notice. And, you know, Stevie Ray worried me. You know, you know, he really got iced by Patrick, and that cost me. But Patrick, underrated, awkward, and awkward in the sense of a positive. As you can see, his style, his takedown style, kind of gives a lot of guys problems with his frame. And then, you know, you had to factor in, it was only Stevie Ray's third fight out of Brazil, year layoff, coming off injury. And I remember looking at pictures of Stevie Ray, and his weight cut did not look like a good one. I mean, the guy looks way too drawn out in the face. He's just so muscular and tick. He's really tick. But, yeah, he just looks super drawn out in the face. And that weight cut, I remember, made me step off the gas in some of the bets for that Brazil card last year, I believe September. But yeah, I do like Stevie Ray here. I think his takedown defense holds. I love Joe Lowe's on a death, but I don't feel he's athletic. I don't feel he has the gas tank, even if he does get him down. You know, unfortunately, you know, as good as Lozon's game is, it's still not like a Damian Maia game over range. We'll still see him get overly excited like he did in transit against Marcin Hild when he could have closed the show. And, you know, although it didn't cost him with some controversial scorecards, yeah, couldn't have made him feel good. And doesn't make you feel good as a backer of Joe Lozon seeing his traditional tropes of kind of getting tired shine through. You know, you don't like seeing that. And that's another thing that kind of makes me lean harder to Stevie Ray here, who, even though he's not training with TriStar, could be a good thing. You know, we see, depending on the style, the jab fundamentals, you know, ring generalship and wrestling conservativeness of the TriStar game plans don't bode with everybody. And, you know, he's not the first Southpaw guy from the UK to recently depart and head back home, so... Well, you know, we'll see. We'll see if that. I don't think it affects him in this matchup. Ray looked good on the feet against Pearson, who I think has a better left hook and better movement and is more consistent. Say what you will about Pearson, is more consistent than Joe Lozon. And Patrick, very underrated. Although I would give a submission edge still to Lozon over Patrick slightly. I do feel the overall grappling, MMA consistency in that department overall with Patrick. And again, despite losing, despite all those intangibles going against Stevie Ray, which likely played a small role, I don't want to take away from Alan Patrick there, makes me feel good about Stevie Ray going into this fight. Played Ray, not confident on the insides, the overs, any of the props. I stayed away from that nonsense. Put a little bit of Ray on the minus 200 juice, nothing too big, but just because of my other two cores were way out of range, being 3-1. So... yeah, I took what I could and played a bit conservative here. All right, and that's going to bring us to the next fight, which is John Dodson versus Eddie Wineland. This is the fight I have done, and like I said, written up the first draft. At least I just have to go through my second and my whole process. And yeah, anyways, I don't know if it's going to make it up or not, but... But yeah, I got the notes in front of me here. It's weird. Eddie Wineland hadn't faced a southpaw in like 10 years. Yeah, you know, not in his UFC career, he hasn't faced one. So it really isn't worth noting when you go back and look at the ones super, super early in his career. But yeah, I'm a defender of Wineland, man. I'm glad to see him on this resurgence. And it looks like he worked through any psychological, physical layoff intangibles. And is giving it all he has on this next run. And I'm not sure how much to the extent of the camp changes were and how much that has to do with his recent run of success. Sure, you could say Sines was a guy that was being very hittable and you know, coming toward his end. And Mizugaki, more obvious trends in that regard. Both older competitors in one way or the other for whether it be their MMA miles or actual age. So, I get not putting too much weight into those. But I do feel, I will say, the pick is Dotson here. I feel this line opened and got inflated way, way too high. I feel like Eddie Wineland's a live dog here. I feel like even though Dodson, you know, again, I like Eddie's style, but I agree. Even though I'll defend it, you really can't defend that he is often too hittable off the counter, and that's where Dodson makes his money. Dodson's like a miniature Chuck Liddell, like I say in the breakdown. You know, he hangs out by those outside octagon lines. And the reason why I pick against Dodson a lot of the times is because I believe that, you know, he's getting older and Miles too, and his, you know, and even though he has a speed advantage over most guys, it just, if he can't put him out, if a guy has decent volume and a decent enough chin to withstand his shots, he can outpoint him. Because Dodson only goes to his wrestling when he's hurt or his opponent's hurt, and that's seldom. He doesn't really look to capitalize there. He'll maybe look to win a round there by going for it at the end of the round, but he's not looking to control in any sense, and he's much more talented than meets the eye. That said, since working with Brandon Gibson, he's evolved his stand-up game. You know, he shows more front teeps, which I don't think will be worth too much of a shit for him, actually, in this fight. But what he has shown is better power kicks. We saw him just, you know, those tie kicks to the body and head, how he disguises them, and his accuracy and speed. You know, we saw him, not ice because, you know, he lost the fight, but really connect with John Lineker on that. I think that that could be a good weapon to corral Eddie, who likes to you know, do those vertical steps. But, yeah, I think, unfortunately, even though I like to, you know, harp that, you know, Dotson's IQ, fight IQ is troubling, and that's why I picked Lineker against him, because, you know, just that volume, he was going to out-volume if you couldn't stop the guy. I do think Dotson's traditional strengths serve him well here. You know, I do think he finds it, he gets it done inside the distance, as it should say on the breakdown there, and, but... Make no mistake, if Dotson doesn't get off to a good start and can't stop Eddie, hits him with a good shot, Eddie takes it and doesn't, it's not dissuaded, Eddie keeps coming. I could see Eddie taking the last two kind of close scorecards just by out-voluming him, because when you look at guys who bring pressure, speed, and footwork, they tend to overload Dotson's system, and whatever improvements you can say he's made from his counters to his fight IQ to his offensive output when he does come forward, all those things, I don't want to say get null and void, but they definitely get mitigated majorly when speed, footwork, and pressure are in the equation. But the caveat is you have to have the durability, because with the pressure and aggression, as we saw even with Mighty Mouse, you're going to get tagged. And Mighty Mouse recovered from that. I don't know if Wineland does. That's the problem. That's why I couldn't pick Wineland. But with that, those odds, I'll be honest, I stayed the hell away from Dotson. I think it's way too expensive. I sprinkled a little bit of Eddie, and I left this the hell alone. So, because again, there's another thing too. Forget the theory of, you know, running rounds on volume, which is very well could happen. Let's not forget, Dotson is not the biggest 135er. He's coming up from 125. You know, his physique, you know, doesn't look great, although it hasn't affected his cardio or speed or power, so I guess we can't really criticize him too much there. And Wineland, on the other hand, say what you will about his chin, that doesn't change the fact that he is still one of the hardest hitting and has been one of the hardest hitting bantamweights in the last decade. He still is one of the biggest bantamweights and has been one of the biggest bantamweights for the last decade. And even though Dotson has a great chin, man, he's getting, you know, he's getting older too. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a crazy, you know, Eddie rock him and sway the momentum of the fight. Maybe not put him away, but sway the momentum of the fight. So there's a lot at play that you know, you could easily write off when you look at it on paper. I suggest don't. Be careful. If you already played Dotson, I don't blame you. He's my pick. I'm not recanting it, but there ain't no way I played it on that. I sprinkled a little bit of love on the other side. Love for the Indiana dog, Wineland. All right, next one, De Lima versus St. Preux. This is the one where it's like Dan Tom parlay fodder all day. Fight should not go the distance because De Lima is a do-or-die guy. You know, that questionable guillotine where he just kind of steps in a full guard, which was super weird. And the weird fight against Krylov, and even the weird fight against Kimball, which he won. I mean, it's just so opportunistic, and it just looks like one of those big guys who just really puts on the big scary thing, but there could be some, you know, there could be a mouse that lives behind those doors. You know, you see these guys, they do those things where they'll put themselves in a submission hold, they'll panic, and they'll give something away. They have to get out of there if they don't win. We see it all the time, and, you know, you see that, who was it? Who is that guy, the Rock, LeVar Johnson? You know, those guys, when they can't ice somebody, they'll put themselves in a submission, and instead of doing even basic fundamental defense, even though you can't expect much of them for not being a ground person, they'll not only put themselves in the submission, but then they'll elect to punch the opponent for defense, you know? But then, which shows the kind of theory, which, you know, I don't like to speculate more than I need to, especially questioning the mental fortitude of a man stepping into the cage. I mean, fuck, both these guys would eat me for breakfast. So I'm not, there's no disillusions there, but hey, I've competed myself, although at a smaller level, and I've I've taken a surprising amount of punches, put a surprising amount of hours in. And you do that, you spend enough time around people to learn fighting characteristics of people, not just yourself, but people outside of yourself. And you see this kind of profile. So I don't mean to take a cheap shot at DeLima by any means, but you just see that, man. And when they do that punching for defense, but then they don't go out and they tap, and don't get me wrong, nothing wrong with tapping. I'm not that guy. But what I'm saying is, you're gonna make a questionable move and act like you're so desperate to get out of it, but know damn well what you're in and tap. It's just, I don't know if I'm articulating it very well, as I'm probably not, but there's a pattern that spells to me. Yeah, especially when you see it in certain guys. Maybe you have to be a grappler. Maybe this is something that I can't articulate, and I'm just stumbling upon my words more. But on the other side, OSP hasn't been consistent either, man. He's just been shit in the bed. You know, I was one of OSP's defenders, you know, with his stance switching and looking like he's doing those shifts, like opening the gate. The one I point to that, you know, even though he doesn't have the traditional martial arts base, he does it like a Kempo karate guy, and he would step back and hit his uppercuts and hard left body kicks. But man, OSP, it's hard to bank. That said, he should be able to win this fight. You know, if the striking doesn't go his way, I think he can take it to the ground. And even if he isn't smart enough to take it to the ground, because I thought he was going to do that against Manoa and more against Ozdemir. But yeah, I think he can do it. I think he can do it against DeLima. And if not, I think DeLima will do it for him if DeLima doesn't get the finish. So I stayed away. I didn't play either side. Not worth it. I think you're getting around minus 165 or something like that for OSP, around minus 150 for plus 140 for DeLima, and minus 160 for OSP. Not worth it either side. Minus 550 went straight up. People are smart, and so are the line makers there for fight does not go the distance. But if you have any fun 5 or 7 man parlays, which I think I did one fun $5 7 man. That's it. And that's in there. And then he's in one of my fun 5-man parlays where I had some dog money in there. I had Alvi inside the distance plus my 3 core favorites, and then I added the Lima OSP does not go the distance. Yeah, so Holtzman Ray, Barbarina, yeah, something like that. I don't know. And then another one piece that I kind of put in here. It's a prop parlay piece that's going to come up in the main event. That was in a lot of them too. But yeah, I kind of sprinkled it around. Did a pair here, a 3 here. Just kind of doing my safe guys, spreading them around in case one of the safe guys fail. I have enough to cover everything. My whole percentage that I put in bank-wise this card. And that way, if just one or two of those pairings hit, I'm good. And everything else is bonus. So we'll see if it works out that way, right? That's always the question. All right, Dan, you're rambling. It's late. Let's get on to the co-main event. Ally Quinta versus Diego Sanchez. All right. Ally Quinta, it's weird. It's kind of deceptive. He's only 0-1 against southpaws. But again, that's Michael Chiesa. Got caught early in his career. First round, was grappling. And that's just because, you know, Rage and Al, maybe a little too confident on top, you know, messed up, not getting a proper whizzer, you know, allowing Chiesa to get his back, got caught sleeping, and what, it was a crafty submission by Mitch Clark. But other than that, it looked great, you know. Yeah, he had the controversial win against Jorge Masvidal, but this is Intangible City. In fact, yes, this is number one on my fights to avoid, because even though the pick is Ally Quinta, I think he's going to at least have to take a round, to get his sea legs back under him. And Diego Sanchez just starts strong usually and only gets stronger consistently. Even effective or not, he gets stronger because he's weird like that, right? Anyways, you know, I could see like the Joe Lozon thing where he ices Diego early. I mean, you know, Diego has been, you know, dropped, stunned, you know, or hurt, visibly hurt in 8 out of his last 12 fights. Think about that. 8 out of his last 12 fights. So that's hard. It's hard to pick Diego with those stats going against him. But, you know, being out for 2 years, Ally Quinta, you know, hearing interviews, he's not excited. Contract disputes. I don't like it. And then, you know, they recently had drinks together and hung out. I believe I've heard Ally Quinta say even before this fight, Diego Sanchez is one of his favorite fighters. There could be that kind of fandom angle. There's just a lot of intangibles at play. Forget the walking, talking intangible and defier of intangibles and facts that is Diego Sanchez on the other side of Ally Quinta. I mean, this is kind of a firestorm either way. I don't blame you if you like the over there. But that's the thing. I don't even know if the over is going to hit, you know. But that being said, the pick here is Ally Quinta by decision, with the caveat of there could definitely be a late stoppage, because I think it's going to take him a while to get his sea legs. We could, you know, maybe see him just kind of be happy to piece up Diego on the feet. On the feet, I believe he's tailor-made for Al style. If Al, you know, again, if he comes back looking at least near capacity what he was. But yeah, no big plays there for me. I skipped it. And it's going to bring us to the main event. Cub Swanson versus Artem Lobov. All right. Let's see. Let me pull something up here. Sorry, I'm grabbing some notes. Sorry for the shuffling of papers. Really bad. Really bad radio. Oh boy. Nope, they're switch stances. Yeah, no southpaw counts needed. Both guys tend to switch stances a lot. Lobov was kind of like a real McGregor, more southpaw early on in his career. You can see kind of those SBG stylings, this awkward, low-handed short arms. And but you know, there's some power there. How much? Overrated, underrated? It's hard. There's arguments that it's overrated. There's arguments that it's underrated. Could he catch Cub here? Yes, he could. You know, Cub tends to get wild and just by sheer aggression, you know, get hit early, primarily by right hands. Cub's been, I think his last, it's in the breakdown. This I do have written down, but I want to say it's like his last three of his last five fights, he's been dropped or like stunned by right hands. So, although Lobov mainly counters with his left, you know, he's developed his right more as he's kind of gone to that side. You know, because he's added leg kicks. That said, I think the kicking advantage is Cub Swanson. In fact, I think Swanson abuses his advantage at kicking range. That's where he's going to have his biggest advantages against Lobov. I think he's going to be smart and stick and move, see what Lobov gives him, and kind of just play at range, dance in and out. You know, he's got his great darts for when fighters do go southpaw. Darts off that right hand is going to serve Swanson well. I think open up a lot of angles for him. And I think that he's going to, well, I'm betting heavily. I bet it heavily on Juice -175. I believe it's now -195. Cub Swanson inside the distance as a recommended prop and parlay piece. I played it both heavily because I think he gets it done, but I don't think he gets it done quite early. I think he doesn't get it done to the third, maybe even fourth round. Lobov is durable. His submission defense has really improved. He's really underrated grappling as far as positional awareness. We saw that in the Ryan Hall fight. So unless Swanson gets him hurt first, I don't think he submits or even keeps Lobov on the ground for that long, because Lobov has good get-up ability. And Swanson, although I love his transitions on top, he's so float-happy, he often lets guys back up. So Lobov's underrated grappling, defense, positional awareness, I think he gets up. But that said, Lobov always seems to tire, win or lose, come that third round. And that's a lot of times where he gets caught, and he's much more hittable when you look at the numbers. So I think Swanson kind of plays, prods, wears him down for two rounds, and we just see him pour it on and get that finish that he was bucking for against Duho Choi, except I think he gets it in the third round. I mean, no, a little too risky to play that. I already played inside the distance. No need to play a third round prop there. But yeah, I got Cub inside the distance. I don't really need to get too much into this one, I guess. I get pretty in-depth, though, of course, as per usual, in the breakdown at mixedmartialanalyst.com, one of the few I did write down for what that is worth. So hopefully that works out. So again, parlay pieces here, Barbarina, Holtzman, Ray, prop pieces, you know, Swanson inside the distance, -195, which works. Well, I got for 175, but little double dip there for the parlay additions when I use them for legs there. But yeah, down to the props. Perry Vicayo, I'm going to be looking for. Cub inside, told you I already put two units at -175. Alvey inside the distance, +320, half a unit. Dandoa Davis under 2.5, plus 110 is what I got it for. Quarter unit on that. Avoid Sanchez, Ally, Quinta, OSP, De Lima, Ortiz, Moreno, and even though it's not on the list, Penny and Taylor. Stay away from that, too. Yeah, I think that's it. I'm going to get back to, now I have the fun job of transcribing everything and inputting everything. That'll take me to the wee morning. It's going to be an all-nighter. Going to get a couple hours of sleep and recharge because it's my girlfriend's birthday this weekend. Amongst many other things, it's her birthday. But with my dog scratching himself to death and sick and her dog who I've been helping babysit, Rango, is only of three legs at the moment because he has a busted doggy ACL, so I've been having to carry him up and down the steps. Yeah, our dogs are both, like, damaged right now, so we were going to go out of town for her birthday, hence why I was going to skip Nashville. Yeah, Danton was actually going to miss his first card since he started, but for one reason or another, I can't stay away from y'all. I appreciate y'all, and again, since the girl we couldn't really go to California or go do a weekend trip, we were going to stay here. I figured I'd get content, and even more so, I'll probably be tweeting with y'all. I'm not sure if I'll do an after party or a day after technical recap. It all depends because my girlfriend's birthday actually is on Saturday. And I told her, I was like, we don't have to watch the fights. You know, it's already a bummer. We don't get to go out of town or do anything fun like I wanted to treat you with everything, you know, work and dogs alike. But get this, guys. Give her the option. She's such a hardcore. She said, no. Friday night we're going downtown having drinks with friends and all that. I want to watch me some fights on Saturday on my birthday. I mean, fucking coolest chick, right? It's her birthday and she wants to watch some fucking fights. So yeah, with her being a trooper, I had no excuses not to leave y'all hanging. I'm sorry for the beginning. I'm sorry for the ranting and raving. Dan Tom clearly needs some sleep. It's not been a good week for the concussions symptom. Let's just say I haven't had a symptom free week. It's been very bad. Yeah, I've been having a lot of bad symptoms lately and fighting that, actually kind of feeling sick in case you can't tell right now. I'm trying to keep my poker face, trying not to play the violin for y'all. That's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to provide technical analysis, maybe a little bit of humor when I can, when I'm not too tired, which one day maybe I won't be. But until then, make sure you're following us at the Protect Your Neck Podcast using hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast. Next week, even though it's crazy, even though I unfortunately had to say no to a lot of things, which... again, if I did, I apologize. It's been a really stressful, it's been a really tough week for Dan Tom personally. I really can't wait to elaborate on it more. The personal bullshit I'll save you, aside from what I already unfortunately beat your ears with. But nevertheless, crazy weeks aside, DMV, dog stuff, all the stuff I'll be taking care of, I'm not forgetting about you guys. There's no UFC card, but we are doing a top five episode. I'm in the process of booking it right now. I'm actually waiting on some people to get back to me. But regardless of if they get back or not, I got some other things in the queue, some things in the ready. A lot of you have reached out, whether a certain one of y'all who I've talked to or been on before wanting to come back on or wanting to come on in the future, and we've talked, and I haven't forgot about you. And more importantly, those of you, especially those of you who reached out using hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast and submitted the top five themes you want to see, you know, top five upsets, top five this, top five that. I really appreciate it. I'm going to have something up by you for late next week, so you have it before the weekend. We'll be back here for some type of thing, whether it's an after party. Again, I don't want to push the envelope too much. It is the girl's birthday, so I'll see how I feel, what I end up doing for that card. If not, we'll get some type of recap. Until then, make sure you're going to MixedMartialAnalyst.com. Until we get the SoundCloud and YouTube up and running, all the episodes are archived there, along with all my breakdowns dating back to 2015. Follow me at the MM Analyst. And until next time, get your rest, watch the dog shits, and protect your neck.